Good afternoon. Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the USPP call. At this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode. There'll be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you that the call is being recorded today on Wednesday, the 21st of March, 2018. And I'd like to hand the call over to your speaker today, Martin Shutevere. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and welcome everyone on the USPP investor update following the publication of our 2017 financials. Tradition, round the table with me here this afternoon. Besides myself, I have Hans Kamps on my right, who will be taking you through the presentation momentarily. And then from Treasury, we've got Frank and Karl Heinz joining us as well. In line with, again, with tradition, following the call, we will be circulating the replay of the call. And following Hans's presentation, there will always be the opportunity to ask questions on the call. With that, Hans, I'd like to hand over to you.
Okay, thank you, Martin. Good morning, everybody. Thanking for calling in. I'm going, as Martin said, going to take you through the presentation slide by slide. Also, I will not discuss every slide at length, so I will call the numbers before I do so, and I'll start off with number three, just the headlines of last year. Down in an operational sense, revenue as well as operational results versus 2016. Not a surprise for anybody, I think. It's what we stated already for a while, that increasingly we are going to be confronted, or we're going to be confronted with the challenging market conditions in most of our markets. We have seen that last year with revenues come down, net profit and EBITDA net profit. If we compare that more or less apples with apples by correcting 2016 for the impairment charges we had, if we do so, 2016 was an operational profit of 276. So we have come down in net profit terms. We have come down in EBITDA terms. All, as I said, a reflection of the current challenging market circumstances. I think two bright spots there. Balance sheet, I venture to say, we still maintain a rock solid balance sheet with a solvency ratio of the end of 2017 of 63%, and an order book that has increased versus the beginning of the year. Slide four, I will skip. I will go to five. I mentioned we have a rock solid balance sheet, notwithstanding the effect, and we'll come back to that later, that we have seen a lot of cash leaving the company. Part of that is to repay the 2010 USPP. A substantial amount was also involved in the reduced negative working capital. We did some substantial capex last year, as a result of which, all in all, we flipped from a net cash position at the beginning of 2017 to a net debt, be it relatively modest, net debt position at the end of the year, resulting in a net debt over EBITDA, conforming the definitions under the documentation with you and with the banks, which is slightly different from our balance sheet numbers, as you know. But a net debt to EBITDA ratio of 0.5, so very well within and below the covenant of 3, and an interest cover ratio of 32. As I said, and I'm continuing on slide 6, revenue have come down. Here you see the regional split up of revenues. Revenues have come down in the Netherlands. Nothing particular there, except for 2016. We still had Dutch tower operations owned for 100% for a part of the year in 2017. As you may remember of previous calls, they have been completely transferred into Kotig Smit. We had some reduced activities in the wind foundation sector and some other activities. None of that very material. And the revenue in the Dutch inland infra segment is on a similar level as 2016. Rest of Europe, also the revenue down, has a lot to do with the reduced revenue in the services activities in offshore energy. Come back to that in a minute. And also there, reduced activity levels in the offshore wind foundation work, less projects in execution in 2017 than the previous year. We had good revenue in the far east and in the Middle East, pretty busy there. Africa, real low level, which has a lot to do with what I just said, the situation in oil and gas. It is simply west coast of Africa is very much impacted by the reduced activities in oil and gas, countries like Nigeria and the surrounding countries, Angola. So substantially reduced revenue versus 2016. North and South America is somewhat lower, but not too far off from the level in 2016. Slide 7, as I mentioned at the beginning, the good thing is our order book has gone up, as you see here, within offshore energy. The order book has stabilized at approximately the same level as at the beginning of 2017, but we've seen a substantial increase in the order book for dredging. That does not include a project that we got awarded the beginning of this year, substantial project in Singapore, the so-called Finger Pier 1 project, be it that is a project that we will be executing over a substantial number of years. And it also applies to some extent for the order book in 2017. It is substantially up versus 2016, but it is somewhat more stretched in time than it was at the beginning of the beginning of the year. But I'll come back to that in a minute as well. Continuing on to slide 9, headlines is the reduction in revenue we see fully reflected in the offshore energy division. Slightly less in towage and salvage, but that has to do with the same factor that I just mentioned, the deconsolidation of the harbour towage activities here in the Netherlands and in Belgium. Dredging and inland infra order book has the revenue has gone up, but I'll come back to that in a minute. The substantial drop in revenues is within offshore energy. Results more or less the same picture. Dredging and inland infra is relatively in line, slightly less than 2016. But the real drop is in offshore energy and to a lesser extent in towage and salvage, and then primarily in our joint ventures. Holding and eliminations. You see a very substantial drop versus 2016, but that's a bit comparing apples with peers. We had, and I'll be discussing that in a minute as well. 2016, we had a positive impact of a number of non-recurring transaction results. The underlying costs of the head office operations and the non-recurring income was more or less in line with 2016. Then going on to the next slide, dredging inland and infra, and I'll just go to slide 11 first, where you see the utilization of the equipment after, I would say, a very weak, extraordinary week 2016. We have done much better in 2017. Most important category of equipment, as you probably remember from previous calls, is the hoppers. Utilization of the hoppers has been substantially better than 2016, with 35 weeks on an annual basis. Cutters, somewhat up, still low, always lower than the hoppers, but usually should be more in the range of 25 to 30 weeks, coming from a very low 2016. So some improvement. Important element there is our new cutter, which is the Helios, which we took into operation mid of last year. Has done a small job to try it out in Rotterdam before sailing on to Oman, where it is employed on the Duqm contract, large contract that we have under execution there, but it only started operating there towards the end of the year. So the impact on the utilization of the Helios in capacity terms has been substantial, but in utilization terms still quite modest because of the mobilization and the late start on the Duqm job. All in all, therefore, a better utilization. EBITDA in line with 2016. So notwithstanding the higher revenue, the higher utilization of equipment, EBITDA in line. And that is the result of the combination of utilization on the one hand, of the results of the projects under execution, where the margins, considering also where the utilization levels in the industry are, where margins are at a somewhat lower level than they were for the previous years. So on the one hand, higher utilization, but at somewhat lower margins. And then the third element, as you know, in that mix is always the settlements of projects that have been technically completed in previous years, but financially completed in 2017. All in all, these three elements resulted in an EBITDA in line with 2016, slightly lower. In EBIT terms, a bit lower than that, which has to do with the same factor that I just mentioned, the Helios that we took into operation. As I said, it contributed to capacity for half a year, so it contributed to depreciation for half a year, but to utilization for only relatively short time. Depreciation on that vessel are in the order of $5 million for the for a half year. So hence the operating result slightly lower than 2016. Order book is better. The Dutch operations, I mentioned it at the beginning, our inland infrastructure operation from an activity level in line with 2016. Around a third of the revenues 2017 are in that area. Result, again, a positive contribution to the result, and a margin, an EBIT margin, in line with previous years, which is in the range of 3 to 4%. Continuing on then to slide 12, offshore energy. As I mentioned at the beginning, that's where we have seen the steep drop in revenues, which has everything to do with the challenging conditions in the oil and gas sector. And in fact, we have seen this coming for already quite a while and anticipated it. We are, with our activities, in particular the heavy marine transport of Dockwise, relatively late cyclical. Also in 2017, we have, but to a much lesser extent than the previous years, been completing some work on long-term contracts that were acquired quite a few years back at price levels that were at that time quite good. But we're in the runoff mode of this work. We still have a little bit to go in 2018, But then for most of our work, and that means also already in 2017, a more substantial part of revenues in the services sector had come from the spot market, where prices are very much under pressure, and where actually a lot of the work we take on, certainly with respect to the lower end of the fleet, for generating cash than for generating EBIT. Price levels there are at a level where most of the contracts are slightly negative EBIT or break even levels at best. That's the services sector. That's where we've seen the decrease in the revenue and most of the decrease in EBITDA. If we look at the contracting part of the business, and as you may remember from the call last year, that's also where we're focusing on increasing the share of our revenues from contracting, because that's where we can create more value with the assets we own. 2017 contracting has contributed to more than 50% of revenue, with around 60% of EBIT of offshore energy generated by the contracting activities, whereas in 2016 contracting generated around 35 to 40% of revenue and around a third of the result. So contracting has done under the circumstances quite well. That is with respect to our landfall projects. That is with respect to rock dumping projects, VBMS. That has contributed for a full year in 2017, whereas it did so only for half a year in 2016. As you may remember, we acquired full ownership of VBMS in the mid of 2016. VBMS has again had a, and VBMS is cable laying for offshore wind farms, has again had a very busy year, with good results, with a number of pretty large contracts under execution and completed well. Where we've seen a decrease in activity is in the wind foundations, whereas in 2016 we had two large projects under execution. In 2017 we have had only one project under execution. Order book, as I mentioned at the beginning, stable at a level of around 2016, with also there a larger share of the order book in the contracting activities. Continue on to slide 13. You may remember, I think we discussed it when discussing the first half year numbers, we acquired Gardline, a competitor of Fugro on the North Sea, surveying activities, geophysical activities and geotechnical surveying activities, primarily on the North Sea, family-owned company that we acquired mid of August last year. Since then, we have been pretty busy in restructuring the activities of Gardline. It's a family-owned company that diversified as well from their core, all kinds of other activities, as well as outside of their core area of operations, which is the North Sea. We have embarked on a program to bring the company back to focus on the core in the on the North Sea and divest or liquidate all other activities that don't fit within that core, except for one that we are going to continue, which is a joint venture in Brazil, profitable operation, We've made good progress there. Still more work to be done, but we've made good progress there. Guardline has contributed to the revenues around 25 million. Most of that period is off season, so on an annual basis, it should be more than double this amount, substantially more than double this amount. From a profit point of view, on operational terms, we had a slight positive EBIT, somewhat better than we anticipated. I think as we announced at the time, we do not expect Guardline to contribute to EBIT for the next few years. We have to bring that company back into good order. But the second half of the year, we were in a positive area. There is a substantial non-recurring result included in the numbers for 2017, which is the result of the transaction based on valuing all the assets of Guardline. And that's been done by independent valuators. The value of the equipment of Guardline was 24 million higher than what we paid for Guardline. Part of that has been absorbed by the costs of the restructuring, as of course, we anticipated those costs when we did the transaction, but the accounting rules do not allow us to take that all into account at the beginning balance sheet. So therefore, on the beginning, the starting balance sheet, we had a profit of 24 million, and we had the restructuring costs in the period, costs of around 10 million, all in all, resulting in a net amount, which is in the offshore energy division of 15 million. So we're on the right way there. As said, we'll have to do some more fixing in the organization, which we are currently doing. But so far, we're very happy with this acquisition, and particularly if we look at the way clients have been positively welcoming this move in the market. Then towage and salvage. Salvage, more or less in line with 2016. In our previous call, 6 months ago, I mentioned that we had a very slow first half of the year, but then, as it can go with salvage, things can differ substantially from one quarter to the other. We had a pretty busy third quarter and an extremely busy fourth quarter, so that at the end of the year, we came down to a similar level as 2016 in revenue terms, bit less in result terms, which had to do with the fact that the contribution of settlement on older salvage jobs. You know, we have these every year, but also that fluctuates from year to year, depending on the number of cases we're able to close. That contribution was slightly less in 2017 than in 2016. Where the drop in this division in EBITDA terms and in operating result terms are, is in the joint ventures. Most of the joint ventures ended 2017 lower than 2016 for a number of factors, different factors in the different joint ventures. We have a few joint ventures that have exposure to oil and gas, where we have seen, particularly in Singapore, with reduced activities for the shipyards in activities. Sorry, for the shipyards in Singapore reduced. We have seen further pricing pressure on in the container shipping sector. So the pricing pressure exerted by the large container lines affecting the joint venture, particularly the joint venture here, Kötter-Smit, in Northwest Europe. We've seen some non-recurring costs in 2017, partly costs as a result of penetrating into new markets. For instance, here in the UK, we have penetrated in the market in Southampton, and some further costs of integration in the Kotech-Schmidt joint venture. As I said, we created that in 2016. 2017, we have been working on bringing those two organizations together, generating some extra costs. All in all, these factors resulting in a lower result for the joint ventures. Next slide. I won't be discussing this because the similar factors, of course, you see reflected in these numbers, which are the numbers on the basis of adding up all the joint ventures, the Dowage joint ventures for the full 100%. Also currency, because some of these joint ventures, and all in all, a substantial part of the revenues and the results of these joint ventures are either in US dollars or in Singapore dollars. Both of these currencies have been somewhat weaker in 2017 and 2016. So also that has played partly a role in the reduction of revenues and results. And then finally, holding and eliminations. And as I mentioned at the beginning, it's a bit comparing apples with pears, because in 2016 we had quite some non-recurring results in there. A minus 30 loss for our share in the result of Fugro in 2016 for minus 30 million. We had 80 million in book profits on various transactions. None of those type of results we had in 2017. We had one major non-recurring expense in 2017, which is 15 million euros, which are the costs of the reorganization that we carried out last year here in the head office in Papendrecht. By the way, as you may remember from what I just said on Guardline, we had around a 15 million badwill gain in Guardline, but we have a non-recurring 15 million expense here on group level. So all in all, these non-recurring major items on balance have not played a role in our results last year. That's with respect to results. Quick view on the balance sheet on slide number 18. As I mentioned at the beginning, you see the amount of cash has decreased very substantially for two main reasons. A, we have repaid the USPP 2010, which was almost 400 million euros. We have more than 300 million more in working capital than we had at the beginning of the year. I'll come back to that in a minute. But net debt position of just over 200 million, so quite modest, I would say. And as I mentioned before, a solvency of 63. That's why I think I can still speak about a rock solid balance sheet. Very quickly, slides number 19 and 20. Cash flow, an EBITDA of almost 450 million last year. Subtract from that our interest expense and taxes, and there is 400 million cash flow for the year. Somewhat lower, as I mentioned, than 2016, and of course substantially lower than our record level profitable years 2014 and 2015. With capital expenditure, we come quite close to that 400 million. We have invested substantially last year, as we have announced throughout the year. And in our business plan, we had expected originally an amount of around 250 million, but that was excluding, as we mentioned from the beginning, any transactions that we may do if the opportunities occur to increase our exposure in the contracting sector in offshore energy. We think this is the moment if we come across the right equipment that we're finding ourselves in a stage in the market where equipment can be bought at, let's say, advantageous prices. We've been successful in doing two acquisitions there towards the end of the year. We exercised an option for a vessel that we had, a diving support vessel that we had under charter already for a number of years. We choose to exercise that option, and we were successful in acquiring two larger diving support vessels, ex-Harkont vessels. One, we acquired the outright ownership, and one, so that's included here in CapEx, and one diving support vessel we have taken on a 3 years bareboat charter at what we believe very advantageous conditions in the current market. So we have strengthened our position in that area substantially. That you see all summarized in the slide 21. Most of the items I think I mentioned, like the CapEx, like the divestment in Fugro at the beginning of last year, which generated 140 million euros. We paid cash dividend around 30 million, the dividend 2016. As usual, we've given shareholders the option to choose for either a cash dividend or a share dividend. Three quarters of shareholders elected for a share dividend. But as we announced beginning of last year, we had the intent to repurchase any shares that we have issued as part of that dividend before the AGM this year. And almost 80% of the shares that have been issued, we have repurchased in the market, spending on that around 80 million. The other major element, and I already mentioned it before, is the outflow of working capital, which was around 320 million last year. Now, to put that into perspective, because that is, of course, a very substantial number, I think we already, and I spent a few words on that mid of last year, saying that, of course, as we see our activity level reducing, and we traditionally, we always have a negative working capital, and that negative working capital has increased, so therefore become more negative as revenues increase. Obviously, as revenues do decrease, that number is also going to decrease. That's why it's relevant to put that in a perspective and to relate the working capital number to the revenues, which we did on slide 22. There you see our development of working capital in a 10 years perspective, and the upper part of that graph is working capital expressed in a percentage of revenue. There you can see that on average over the last 10 years that has been at around 19%, but with fluctuations and certain substantial fluctuations over the years. You see a period 2009 2011 where it has been more negative than average, and you've seen a similar period the last couple of years, and that has all to do with large projects and payment condition of on large projects, and generally that's just a few handful of large projects in the early years of this decade. That was a project Gorgon in Australia with very advantageous payment terms. But that project was completed around 2011, 2012. Then you see we went down to as low as minus 12, so even lower than we ended 2017. You've seen again a move into more substantial negative working capital in the years 2014, 2016. That has to do with, again, a few large projects, couple of those for Dock-Wise, the long-term contracts that I mentioned before. Good example of that is the Aasta Hansteen project that we completed last year. With these long-term projects, traditionally, we get substantial prepayments. But those projects have largely been completed. As I mentioned earlier, we're now to a very large extent depending for these years on the spot market, where the payment terms are different. And another factor, also, a few large projects have been in the area of wind. We're also, at this point in time, we don't have similar projects with a similar payment profile into our portfolio. So we again moved closer to the long-term average. Finally, but I already mentioned it at the beginning on slide 23, the covenants 0.5 net debt over EBITDA, 32, the interest coverage ratio, and also here in this graph, the expiry date of our facilities. Nothing requires refinancing in the immediate future. Then finally, the dividend proposal. Is the same as last year, which means a higher payout than is part of our dividend policy. But as we always said, our dividend is finding the balance between, on the one hand, the policy, which is longer term, a payout ratio of 40 to 50%. But we also have an eye of the interests of the shareholders, obviously, and the wish there of many of the shareholders to have stability in dividend. We take, of course, into account our balance sheet, but as I mentioned several times, we have a rock solid balance sheet. The way we look forward, we will be able to maintain that rock solid balance sheet. Also, if we maintain the dividend at the current level, so therefore we are proposing a dividend of 1 euro per share, the same as 2016. And again, in a form where the shareholder can choose between cash and or shares. Outlook for 2018. The last slide. Ongoing mixed picture in the market. Dredging and infra is a reasonable volume. Not a buoyant market in dredging. Not a buoyant market at all, but a reasonable market. We don't anticipate for the foreseeable future any major changes there. Towage, we also see. I mentioned it. We had pressure on the results last year, but in volume terms, we've seen the business developing generally stable. Here and there, slight growth. We think that is also going to be the situation looking forward. And within offshore energy, on the one hand, in the services part of that business, we see for the time being the continued imbalance in supply and demand. That business will also in 2018 be under severe pressure. I already mentioned it. It is spot market. Prices are under severe pressure in the spot market, but we see opportunities in contracting. We have some good contracts in portfolio right now. All in all, it's very early days, and we don't make a specific forecast at this time of the year for the year. But all in all, we believe it is going to be somewhat of a stretch in 2017 to match the in 2018 to match the result of 2017, and CapEx is excluding any potential transactions like the ones that I just mentioned in 2017 in the area of diving support. We have a few other assets on our list that if the right opportunity arises, we would like to add to our portfolio. But excluding that, we believe CapEx this year to be in the same order of around 250 million.
Thank
okay, Martijn, I'm handing back to you then.
Thank you very much, Hans. Thanks for running us through. With that, operator, I'd like to request you to open the call for any questions from investors that we have for us. Go ahead.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel the request, please press the hash key. That's star 1 to ask a question. We have a question from the line of Cecile. Michelle, please go ahead.
Hello. First, thank you very much for the presentation and all the detail provided. It's very useful. Just two questions from me. First, I did not really understand why the working capital is moving in an adverse way because you have lower revenue, so I would have expect working capital to reverse a bit. So that's the first question. And the other one is, could you please comment on the – you mentioned a bit the competitive environment for the offshore energy. Would you mind also commenting on the other competitors in your other divisions and especially Chinese player? Thanks.
Yes. Well, on working capital, as I think I tried to explain, is we typically run negative working capital, and that's for various reasons. That is for A, usually, and also that depends from contract to contract. But we try to get on jobs when we can. Advance payments, which keeps us in a positive position while carrying out the work. That on the one hand, and on the other hand, we have like payments to subcontractors, payment to tax authorities, etc., which are usually running behind payments that we receive from clients. So as long as I have been in this business, and which is over 30 years, we have had a negative working capital. But that means that if revenues go up, you generally see that the negative working capital goes up as well. So therefore, there is an inflow of money. Now we have seen revenue coming down, so that there is less inflow of advance payments, etc. Than there is in payments on jobs that have been completed. So that's more or less the structural factor. Mm-hmm. And the other factor is just working capital. I mean, we are running a large portfolio, but that large portfolio is a lot of smaller contracts, and also and certainly in the busier years, a portfolio of relatively large contracts. And payment terms on these large contracts can have a substantial impact at any point in time on our working capital. And for instance, I mentioned a factor in the last few years is a few wind foundation projects where also we had procurement in our scope of work, and where we were able to have payments made by our clients in anticipation of payments we had to make at a later stage to our subcontractors. And of course, I mean, working capital, you see two moments in time during the year, two specific dates, 30th of June and the 31st of December, and the exact composition of our portfolio and the payment terms on projects under execution at that point in time have a significant impact on working capital. Now maybe you could have the follow up question then: what does this mean in the current market situation? Could we see another year of such a severe outflow of working capital for 2018 and maybe for 2019, And then my answer would be no, not to that extent, because as I just mentioned, we don't have more of these large projects with very advantageous payments term in the portfolio right now. Whereas therefore, as we finalize those projects, we will see the same phenomenon. Again, we will see some fluctuations. The mid of the year, we always see some outflow that we usually see reversed in the second half of the year. We are going to have fluctuations from one balance sheet date to the other, but let's say the extent of this outflow as we've seen it in 2017, I do not anticipate for the years going forward. With respect to competition, nothing really has changed there in 2017. If we look at competition in dredging, it is still the same four players here from Holland and Belgium. I think we're all doing and working at approximately similar levels. We believe that in utilization terms, we may be doing may have done in 2017 slightly better than our competitors. Chinese are there, but have been there for a while. Certain areas in particular, when you're looking at, let's say, Chinese-sponsored development, so projects within the framework of the One Belt, One Road, or where they have a strategic significance from China, and that is mainly in Africa, we see them sometimes more competitive than usual, but again, that has been the situation already for years. I mentioned the revenue coming down quite substantially in Africa last year, but that has been far more an effect of the general volume of projects in the market coming down than as the result of competition.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and maybe one follow-up question on the environment. Some of your competitors have mentioned on, you know, larger, lumpier EPC-style contract coming to the market and some pressure to shift away some operational risk from the client to the contractor. Is that something you see also, or that you?
Just describe which types of projects are you referring to? Dredging or offshore?
It's mainly offshore wind.
Okay, offshore wind. I think one of the things which we've seen there is that indeed the large wind developments. That on the one hand we've seen subsidy levels coming down to zero. That's where the latest Dutch park earlier this week was issued at a zero subsidy to Vattenfall. In that sense, the pressure being put on the developers has increased, and they're obviously transferring that pressure down into the supply chain. At the same time, we're seeing to accomplish these zero subsidy levels, economies are being pushed and larger turbines are being penciled in, and I stress penciled in because many of these turbines have not even been are not proven yet, are not out there yet, so they are being offered in anticipation of installation in 2021-22. And with that, we also see that one of the areas where you see that the benefits can be gained in the NPVs of these in the processes is by shortening the execution of the construction period. Where in the past we saw that you have two seasons to install 100 foundations with cables and turbines, the math is simple. If you can squeeze it into one season, that helps in your DCF. Now, all of these factors contribute that there is more pressure being put into the supply chain in the construction phase, that we say that where we are involved in installation of foundations, in the installation of cables, where our core business sits, we're quite comfortable in doing that. Where we are, however, increasingly reluctant is if you look at jacket structures in particular, and jackets, you could say it's, you know, these are just a bunch of pipes being welded together. Well, it's a little more complex than that. Every jacket is unique, the depth of the water, the forces they have to withstand. This is not like an oil platform where you have one or two jackets. You're looking at the number of turbines multiplied by the jackets. You're looking at multiple yards where sourcing has to take place. The complexities all of this brings is that we are seeing that cost and production time is becoming increasingly difficult to manage. We, as a simple contractor, are feeling increasingly that this is not an area where we are comfortable to take the risks onto our own books on the entire, you know, managing the supply chain and the construction within our own scope of work. So I think that's probably where you're coming from. We see that increasingly pressure is being pushed into the supply chain, and we're very particular and picky on what we feel comfortable, and where we do not feel comfortable taking the procurement on our books, we will not do that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star one. Your next question comes from the line of Nirav Mehta. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, and echoing Cecile's thanks for the call. It's Nirav from New York Life. Just one question around, there's this increased push to do more in offshore energy in the contracting space. Could you just tell us a bit more about how those contract structures and profiles are different from the rest of the division, just, you know, in terms of their length, the kind of the risk return you see on them, how profitable they are? It'd be helpful just to help kind of understand that shift. Thank you.
Well, I think as I mentioned, we're seeing the shift, and which is part of our strategy to move away from at least that part of the services, which we call it's the lower part of our S-curve, where it is basically putting transportation capacity into the market, where, let's say, the risk profiles are rather simple. It is just putting away capacity, relatively simple contractual structures. It is payments for transportation trips, but that's where the business is under pressure, where there is little value we can add, except for at the higher end of the services sector, which is oil and gas. But that's a matter of time. We'll have to wait until the market has sufficiently recovered to see to prices there and volume in particular recovering. When we move to the offshore energy division, most of that business is not unlike dredging, which means it is lump sum contracts, which require two things. A, they require assets. I mean, there are contracts there that do not require assets or that require assets that we do not own. That's why we are very reluctant with these contracts, because if on these contracts risks occur, and I mean, contracting is always dealing with risks, and some projects go better than anticipated, and other projects go worse than anticipated. But what we do not want is to be in a squeeze, whereas on the one hand, we have committed to a lump sum price, and we need more time. We need more time of equipment put on a job that is third party's equipment. So it is good for the owner of the equipment, it is good for the client, but we're in the squeeze. So we focus on executing contracts where the most important equipment on the job is equipment that we own, and where we combine our contracting competencies with that equipment. That on the basis of generally lump sum contracts. And there what we still see also under the current circumstances, and I mentioned we currently have a couple of projects in that portfolio where, let's say, if everything goes well on these projects, and again, I mean, it's always a bunch of risks we have to run, and some risks we can control better than other, like, for instance, weather. With a lot of these activities, we are weather dependent. Sometimes the weather helps, sometimes it causes us issues. But generally, where we see we add value and we can make good margins. Now, in the current market, where in oil and gas things are depressed, volume is under pressure. Also, those margins are under pressure. But not to the same extent as in the services sector. And as Martijn mentioned, I mean, and that's the thing where you also have to be, look, in transportation, it's about volume and getting the jobs that are out there and making sure that you get some jobs. And when prices are bad, that's it. But as long as it generates cash, it is worthwhile to put equipment at work, vessels at work. The minute we get to the point where it doesn't contribute any cash, we will put the equipment, as we've done with some of the vessels, in layup mode, reduce all the cash, and then we prefer to reduce capacity and bring that back into the market when volume has recovered substantially. On the contracting side, it is finding the right balance. On the one hand, with respect to utilization of the equipment, and on the other hand, finding the projects with a risk profile and a margin profile that some of these two is profitable, which also means, as Martijn says, in certain of these areas, we have to be selective and be careful not to run into projects where there are too many risks that we feel we cannot adequately control. But on the basis of we have that selectivity in acquiring projects and in the balance of our competencies and the equipment available also in the current market circumstances, we believe and we see that we can create positive and sometimes even very substantial positive EBITDA on individual projects.
Maybe just one addition, Hans, if you may. But
yep.
I think you know, in our ambitions, you know, ultimately we are a contractor, and that's what in dredging. That's, you know, clearly the case. All of our business is contracting. In offshore, it's a mixture. The mixture is not that we have a strategy of being and a service provider, standalone and a contractor. The assets which sit in servicing have to have a distinguishing capability and from time to time can be used in contracting, because if they do not have that, it's a commodity. And pure commodities, our view is we can rent that in if and when needed. So in that sense, the services business is something which we accept if we can use the assets from time to time in contracting. That's one comment. The other comment is in our ambition to further do more contracting, I think very important to also state what we do not target, also because it was mentioned in the previous question, we have no ambition to become an EPCI contractor. We have no ambitions to have a fabrication yard, to be building structures which we are going to then install later ourselves. That is a very clear no-go area for us.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. We have no further questions at this time. Please continue.
Okay, we'll give you a few more seconds to put that last question in. And if this was all, then on behalf of all of us here in Papendrecht, we'd like to thank you for dialing in today. If you have any other questions, don't hesitate to reach out to any of us. The replay will be circulated after the call. And unless something unexpected happens, we look forward to having the call 6 months from now with the half-year numbers 2018. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. That does conclude the conference for today. Thank you all for participating. You may now disconnect.